You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Yeah, so the book is called Love is Oxygen, How God Can Give You Life and Change Your World. And the whole premise of the book is, number one, that in the same way oxygen gives life to the human body, God's love gives life to the soul. And so there's two big premises in the book, and it's, number one, it shares my story of encountering God's love. There was a time in my life where I was battling with severe depression. Found myself Googling painless ways to commit suicide, thought that God didn't love me. I didn't think I had a purpose in this world. And I just didn't really know what else to do. And so, number one, it's showcasing God's love to people no matter what you're dealing with, no matter what you're struggling with.
That's megachurch pastor, author, and mental health advocate Jared Wilson talking about his book, Love is Oxygen. Tragically, he recently committed suicide, sent shockwaves through the evangelical community, kind of the megachurch community. How is the media covering it? And is it cruel for the media to cover a story like this? Tragic pictures of him standing there with his young wife and his children. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 12th of September. Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about media coverage of the suicide of megachurch pastor, author, and mental health advocate Jared Wilson. Dr. Adam Francisco is with us after that. Our series on introducing the Quran continues with Surahs 109 and 112, kind of related to one another, whether or not Islam, the Quran in particular, teaches religious toleration or pluralism. Then Pastor Ted Geese joins us to review the movie It, Chapter 2. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the suicide of megachurch pastor Jared Wilson, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here, even though it is a very sobering subject.
Is it cruel for the media to cover a story like Jared Wilson's suicide?
I really don't think it is, and if I may be so bold, if you read the very touching letter that this man's wife left, posted on Instagram with kind of a photo tribute to him, she made it very clear that their ministry and the organization that Jared Wilson founded to help fight depression and suicide, that they would carry on, that this work would go on, and that it would go on because of what he believed. And I think it's very important to separate the fact that when you're dealing with someone who is battling with clinical, measurable depression, there are times when they are not themselves. And there are times when they are wrestling with things inside them that, even though they know they're irrational, that does not mean they're not real. Something like this, you know, makes everybody think. And if there's any other listeners who at any point in their life have wrestled with what, I was never clinically diagnosed, but, you know, wrestled with what seemed at the time certainly to be severe depression, to the point of having times that you were so depressed, and there was kind of times like when you just came to an hour later and you were not sure how you got somewhere or what you were doing there. It says something about myself that during a very difficult senior year of high school for me, I had this happen once or twice, and each time I kind of came to in the classical music section of the local bookstore, of the local record store. And I was looking at music, which always to me is a symbol of whatever emotional mood I'm in at the time, or things like that. So anyone who's wrestled with this topic or has known someone who's wrestled with this topic, I have a member of my family who all the way back in the early 80s wrote a book on suicide and suicide prevention. So this is something, and ministry directly related to it. This particular loved one is a pastor and someone with a doctorate in counseling and someone who knew the front lines of this battle personally. So is it cruel to cover this? I don't think so. Is it painful to cover this? Absolutely. Is that pain a sign that this subject is real and that your church must confront it and deal with it, as Jared Wilson spent years of his life trying to get the church to deal with this subject realistically? If that's a source of the pain, then to me, that's part of the story. Does that make any sense?
Yes. You know, we're dealing here with someone who is well-known in Christian circles, but especially kind of in the new evangelical circles. I don't know what mm-hmm. better to call that. I think we're still formulating an idea of what this kind of socially active wing of evangelicalism that does not track with old evangelicalism should be called. But how much exposition does a journalist need to do? Because his general audience will not know the name of Jared Wilson.
Yeah, but a lot of people will know Harvest Fellowship, and more people would know the name of Greg Laurie, the senior pastor at that church, in large part because, you know, he's worn that, one of the people bearing the label, the next Billy Graham, you know, one of the people that's kind of been affixed with that impossible label. I also think the main thing you need to know about this particular kind of seeker-friendly church is that they are also known for a heavy emphasis on small group ministries and small groups that try to help people wrestle with specific problems and issues in their lives. And these are often churches that have the resources to do that. Just to give you an example, back when I taught at Denver Theological Seminary in the early 90s, my office was right next door to the late and extremely great Vernon Grounds, the founder of Evangelicals for Social Action, but also one of the first people in evangelicalism to hang out a legitimate medical shingle in the world of counseling, and not just pastoral counseling. We're talking insurance-worthy medical counseling-level stuff. And Vernon ran a conference center on this, but also ran, with several others, an actual collection of counselors, an actual office, a counseling office and facility. One of the things that Vernon told me, he lived into his middle to late 90s, sharp as a tack. Vernon said he had to get churches to take this subject seriously, but also realize that they couldn't handle it. That this was a subject serious enough that the main thing you wanted a church to know was the warning signals for the depth of the problems they were dealing with in order to get people professional help. So one of the things I would follow up on this, I would be absolutely stunned if Harvest Fellowship didn't have a pretty sophisticated connection to counseling programs. And to me, it would be interesting to look at the details of what this young man helped set up. Because in some ways, what he was telling people to do becomes a part of his legacy, even as his own defeat in this personal battle. And I think it's, again, important to stress, defeat in a moment that we don't understand. I think it's important to go back and look at the details of what this church was trying to do to carry out his wishes and his ministry. Let me note one other thing here real quick, because this, to me, a lot of people focused on the he left these incredibly poignant messages in Twitter. Have you actually read them?
I have. Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
It's unbelievable. Shortly before his death, I mean, we don't know the time of the suicide, but at 5:01 p.m., and he dies that night, we have him saying, "Loving Jesus doesn't always cure suicidal thoughts. Loving Jesus doesn't always cure depression. Loving Jesus doesn't always cure PTSD, post-traumatic stress disease. Loving Jesus doesn't always cure anxiety. But that doesn't mean Jesus doesn't offer us companionship and comfort. He always does that." Unbelievably poignant. But the one that got me was the one earlier in the afternoon when he says, "Officiating a funeral for a Jesus-loving woman who took her own life today. Your prayers are deeply appreciated for the family." Now, this may seem totally illogical to you, but I started thinking about that in the context of 9/11, and specifically a story linked to 9/11 that I've always thought, out of the myriad impossible to grasp stories of 9/11, to me, one of the most poignant was of the Roman Catholic priest, Father Michael Judge, a 69-year-old priest and counselor to fire departments, who kept running back into the chaos of the Twin Towers, literally as they stood on fire, helping firefighters, helping carry bodies, and doing everything he could to help, and then died of a heart attack in the midst of 9/11. And they carried him and placed him below the altar of a local Catholic church. And I thought to myself, here is a man who was willing to keep running into fires with the people who were fighting fires. And in the end, it took his life, or it was too much to bear at one particular moment. And in some strange way, these two stories yesterday for me became linked. In a way, I would like to say that Jared Wilson is someone who kept running into burning fires of situations with people wrestling with depression, wrestling with suicidal thoughts. And in spite of his weakened conditions, and, you know, I don't know how we know, I don't know whether the family will discuss this, was that last funeral one fire too many? Was that something that put too much weight on his fragile back? I don't know. But to me, am I making any sense with that connection?
Oh, absolutely.
This man knew what he was doing working in this ministry. And I'm sure he knew the risk. And I'm sure he took part in that funeral on that day to some degree knowing the risk of what he was doing with his own life. But as in that recording that you played, you remember the part where he said, "I needed to find a purpose for God in my life so that I knew what I was about." I don't remember the exact statement, but specifically the phrase jumped out at me that he was trying to find a purpose in his life. And I'm sure he would say that his purpose was trying to help wake the church up to the seriousness of this problem and the serious threat to the people who wrestle with it. And that was the fire he was willing to keep running back into. And I think the ministry and the details of his method and his message there, I think that is a story worthy of page one anywhere.
Should the journalist covering this story, should he delve into the subject of the varying and sometimes very nuanced views of suicide in the Christian church, as broad as it is?
Well, I think there's a subject ahead of that one. The reporter can assume that it's inevitable that the reader has heard some people say that anyone who commits suicide is doomed immediately to hell. Yet, at the same time, a lot of readers would be aware of the fact that the church's theology has gone beyond that, especially when you're dealing with situations involving mental illness. At that point, you can hear someone say, what mentally healthy person takes their own life? Well, now here comes the debate. I think you have to include enough material about that to at least acknowledge it. I think the bigger subject here, and in my post at Get Religion, I opened it by saying, did you need more evidence that we live and strive to do good journalism in a broken world? Did you need a reminder that any journalist who works on the religion news beat needs to dig into a dictionary and learn the meaning of the theological term theodicy? And of course, theodicy, to use the phrase from C.S. Lewis, is putting God in the dock. And that's a British phrase for putting God on the witness stand, putting God on trial. I think that just as many people are going to look at the details of this story and say, okay, God, come on. You know, what is this all about? Couldn't you have prevented this? So I think the other story, apart from theodicy, is the simple story of the people to whom Jared Wilson was ministering, and the people in that congregation, and the facing the question of, was this God's will? Did God plan this? Show us God's plan and redemptive purpose in this. I'm sure as a pastor, don't you assume that if you walked up into the pulpit of this church on Sunday morning, that a healthy number of the people sitting out in that congregation are thinking that?
Yes.
And that's a theology puzzle as deep as Job. And the Bible doesn't offer them any deeper than that. And does a newspaper reporter want to go into that? I believe yes. Just like a newspaper reporter at Columbine had to face the question. Just as a newspaper reporter standing looking in the ashes of the Twin Towers had to ask the question. Theodicy, we have an entire section of the library at Get Religion dedicated to stories about theodicy, including some where reporters were covering theodicy stories, even if they didn't know it. And to some degree, that was one of my points here. And I was discussing that with my own priest just last night. And he was thinking, that's the layer behind people saying, this just doesn't make any sense. Or, why did this have to happen? The question after that, of course, is, okay, God, why'd you let it happen? Why'd you make it happen? Did you mean for this to happen? Attending the funeral of the wife of a friend of mine years ago, who she died very young, was hit head on in a car crash and died. And the priest preaching the sermon preached on the subject, was this God's will? And the unforgettable line, you know, it says, we will have to wrestle with what God meant with this, what role God played in this, what God wants us to take from this. But we can absolutely say that what this woman in Christ is experiencing now is God's will for her and for her eternity. Complex message. I know at this point I'm rambling, but I have to give you one other personal layer. My father spent the last decade or so of his active ministry, a Southern Baptist minister. When he retired, he finally got to do the job he had wanted to do all along, but many of the details related to education and World War II and other things got in the way. He was a hospital chaplain, and my father was the Southern Baptist hospital chaplain in Texas Children's Hospital, which meant he spent oh, 75% of his time dealing with the parents of children with cancer or leukemia in particular. And I once asked him, I said, Dad, how do you manage to do that? And he said, oh, yeah, there are days when I want to know why. There are days when I shake the bars of the window of heaven wanting to know what this is all about. He said, at the same time, I've never had any difficulty going to the hospital in the morning because I've never felt more needed trying to help these people with the details of their life and their faith and their questions and their struggles. And I absolutely knew what it was God wanted me to be doing with them. Well, once again, I think you would, Jared Wilson, if you listen to his sermons and you read his writings, I think he would say that he was doing what he believed God wanted him to do. And at one point, for a moment, clearly it was too much for his human spirit to bear.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the suicide of megachurch pastor, author, and mental health advocate Jared Wilson. Well, there's a larger story that needs to be told as well, and perhaps this is a media opportunity to talk about suicide as, well, what people usually call it, an epidemic, a growing epidemic. Stay tuned.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press. Saving Western civilization one student at a time.
College Preparation Station is proud to announce the opening of its first Missouri location, Creve Coeur. College Preparation Station provides ACT, SAT, PSAT instruction, and college scholarship guidance. Their new Creve Coeur branch is located at 11,500 Olive Boulevard. Learn more at cpsprep.com or call 314-750-5967. College Preparation Station in Creve Coeur, Missouri, and Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the suicide of megachurch pastor Jared Wilson. Terry, I know that you have actually done some work on this yourself, because if I recall correctly, several years ago when you spoke at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, one of your fellow speakers was Pastor Todd Peppercorn, who addressed the issue of depression, and I think he also included as part of his subject suicidal thoughts and things like that. And if I do recall, you wrote about it afterward.
Yes, I did. And of course, there you have once again the image of a pastor wrestling with suicidal thoughts and depression, and just the difficulty, I mean, like trying to get up and talk about Easter when you're contemplating suicide, or when you've got issues on your mind that at one point or another have been linked to suicidal thoughts. He raised a very interesting point linked to a study that came out about that time from the people at Lifeway Research, that 55% of people in American Protestant churches said that they believed that if they brought up issues of mental health and depression in their church, they did not believe they would be welcomed by the church, that was a subject they thought that the church would turn away from it. That's distressing, to say the least. And only 21% actively, positively affirmed, if I had a mental health issue, I believe most churches would welcome me. Only 21%. That's a genuinely frightening statistic, especially if you look at other studies that are being done right now in terms of the shocking rise of loneliness. And I know that loneliness is not the same thing as clinical depression, but you would have to say that excessively lonely people that's not a good state of mind with which to wrestle with these issues, right?
If we could talk a little bit about, as you say, stories linked to this story in the age of internet news, what do you want to discuss?
Well, a couple of them that you might not connect right off, but this is something that I've been reading a lot about recently because I've been interested in the whole subject of physical issues, mental problems, and other things that are becoming linked with cell phone addiction, a topic that you and I have talked about before. So let's look at some associated subjects. Sleep deprivation. There seems to be right now a rising tide of young people and young adults who, because of the role of screens in their lives, whether that's, you know, entertainment or whether that's just cell phones or sleeping with that cell phone by your head, being harassed during the middle of the night, sleep deprivation is emerging as a major problem among young people in American life. Connected with that is one of the activities hiding in that cloud, which is bullying of various kinds, a subject that I think every church should perhaps deal with at least once a year. This loneliness crisis is also linked to another one, and that is there are a lot of people, especially in my experience, a lot of people in the church, young people in the church, who are delaying marriage for reasons that are not of their choosing, whether it's problems trying to land that first worthy middle-class job, or whether it's overwhelming college debt that they feel is on their back. You've got a lot of people who really wish they were married, who really wish they could start a family, who wish they could move on into the next stage of their life. Now, I know there are lots of young people that would say that isn't a primary concern. My experience in the church is that there are quite a few singles right now who are not welcoming it, and that is a major source of depression and pain in their life. Any book or any article that's serious that you read about suicide, one of the things you will read is that people who have suicidal thoughts often, not always, but often have some sort of inescapable burden, something they just can't seem to get rid of, some problem that they just can't seem to solve. And thus, they are left thinking, how do I get out of this? And how do I get out of this isn't a bad way of stating what I consistently read as a thought linked to suicide and to depression.
So what is the goal here? Just think of this in terms of being a straight journalist, maybe no religion angle to speak of. What is the goal in telling this tragic story?
Okay, well, let's back up for a second. And in this case, I think we should start with the pulpit. What is the goal of a minister in dealing with this subject? Well, I think you could start by saying it's to save souls and to save lives. Whatever you want to talk about the theological connection here, suicide and depression is a threat to a person's spiritual health, at the very least. So you couldn't get to weightier subjects for a pastor in terms of responsibility. Second, that pastor needs a coherent and responsible approach to how to recognize and deal with signs that there may be depression in an individual or hiding in a family within their parish. And I think, as Peppercorn requested that day at the conference, this is a subject that he believes must come from the pulpit. That if people do not hear this affirmed from the pulpit as a serious subject worthy of thought and prayer and activism and ministry, it's not going to happen. Okay, so now flip that around. The story to me is whether churches are dealing with this issue, which is both physical, mental, moral, and spiritual. Because churches are one of the places that a sizable part of the population would at least think they could possibly get help. And if a church became known for offering this help, well, first of all, they better take it seriously and make sure they've got a licensed counselor lined up that they can handle this in a responsible and legal way. Because many pastors may be thinking, oh man, I don't want to take on the liability issues related to ministry in this area. No way I'm going in there. So does that mean you can avoid it? Does that mean you go silent on loneliness and sleep deprivation and unemployment and the broken hearts of people yearning for marriage and family and whatever? You're going to avoid all those subjects? You're going to say the Bible doesn't have anything to say about that? Well, okay, reporters, there is a valid secular subject here, which is whether churches are prepared to deal with this and how they're dealing with it. And like, say, within a Roman Catholic archdiocese, I would think there would be some committee involved in pastoral care that would be trying to help parishes deal with this and make recommendations. There are structures here that you can approach. If there are seminaries nearby, there will be people teaching pastoral care. But most of all, find a church that is taking this issue seriously and, I can't stress this too much, responsibly, and trying to model how to help people with this. And of course, the minute you say you're going to help people with this issue, that means you're going to put out a lot of fires, and there are going to be some, because you're a hospital dealing with wounded, spiritually wounded people. People are going to have to be ready for the losses, and they're going to have to be ready for the pain as well. But that doesn't mean that they should be avoiding the subject.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be here.
When we come back from this break on this Thursday afternoon, we're going to be continuing our series with Dr. Adam Francisco, author of the book Martin Lutheran Islam, introducing the Quran. Will be in Surah 109 and 112 that deal with religious pluralism, some people say, and the unity of Islamic belief on Allah.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During September, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their ministry of the month, Grace Place Wellness Ministries. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org, serving the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community, Lutheran Federal Credit Union, LutheranFCU.org.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Looking for a faithful Lutheran church in East Central Oklahoma? Welcome to Trinity Okmulgee, a friendly and faithful LCMS congregation only 40 miles south of Tulsa. Hi, this is Pastor Chris Teves. Check us out at trinityokmulgee.org. That's Trinity, O-K-M-U-L-G-E-E, all one word, .org. See you soon at Trinity Okmulgee, Oklahoma.